This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's 6 in the morning, Friday the 7th of January. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together in studio today with Kusu Chuang and Philip C.
Very good morning.
I noted the hesitation that you cut.
You did. You forgot it.
My name. What is this? What is the name of this Chinese guy? In front of me? Oh yeah, Kusu Chuang.
It's been a while,
it's
Chuang.
Balding.
It's been a while.
You didn't see his receding hairline. That's why. It was very different Chuang from last year.
It was. It has been. I haven't seen you since last year. That is very true.
Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise? Or neither.
You are far from Brad Pitt or far from Tom Cruise. You're more like Flo Rida.
Thank you. I try my best.
You're starting 2022 with the same confidence that you always do, Chuang. I love it. That's fantastic. It is the first Friday of the year.
I wonder if that confidence was the result of the booster he got.
Well, actually, Chuang was among the first of us to get the booster jab.
I was.
Because he's one of the oldest, right?
That's why I got my booster la. You know what I'm saying? Actually, I didn't have any hesitation. I should have. But I just went for it.
So what happened? Oh yes, I remember the trade war in your stomach, right?
Yeah,
how did that go?
I did China. Then I welcomed America into my body, and
Pfizer.
So far, yeah, America. Well, Pfizer, yeah, and no trade war. Fine, fantastic.
See, we should give peace a chance. Essentially,
we should do a John Lennon. Do you know what I mean?
All right, we've got a range of issues that we're covering on the show this morning. First up at 7:15, we're continuing the conversation sparked by the MACC chief's conflict of interest saga. This time we're looking at how public institutions are held accountable. We'll be speaking to Tricia Yeo, CEO of Ideas, for her take.
Very interesting, because we saw a lot of stories also developing yesterday with the SC reaching out and telling Azam Baki that we'll be in touch.
We'll definitely cover that in a little bit when we look at the local headlines. But also at 7:30, we're going to be covering the January 6th anniversary of the Capitol Hill riots. It's been 1 year since that happened. Can you believe it?
And there was President Biden's speech as well.
He made an address commenting on what happened. We're going to be discussing the situation with political expert Mark J. Rosell later on at 7:30. And on the breakfast grill today, we check the pulse of our medical tourism industry. Philip, you'll be speaking to somebody.
Yes, I'm going to speak to Muhammad Dawud Muhammad Arif. He's the CEO of Malaysia Healthcare Tourism Council. So very interesting development, because we know the healthcare tourism business has been really affected. And to understand what his trajectory and plan is for the next 10 years, very interesting to watch out and listen to.
All right. All this and more on the show this morning. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. That was Fleet Foxes with Ragged Wood. Such a nice way to start a Friday morning. This is The Morning Run. Shazana Chuang and Philip here with you. It's 6:08 in the morning. We'll be with you all the way up to 10 a.m. Now, let's take a look at some stories that have caught our eye. We all know that Shakespeare quote, "What's in a name? A rose by any other name would still smell as sweet." Oh, I missed my chance to quiz you, Chuang. Who said that quote? I just gave you the answer. It was Shakespeare. Now, this may apply to flowers, but does it hold for companies? This morning, we're going to be pondering the causes and consequences of businesses changing their names.
I like that quote a lot, because, you know, we've been having this discussion. As we know, I think this week, Malaysia's Air Asia decided to rename the company as Capital A. So I think that triggered a lot of discussion, you know, about changing company names. And this is not a new concept. Yeah, we've seen this happen before with Philip Morris changing its name to Altria, and very recently Facebook changing its name to Meta as well.
I did not know Philip Morris changed their name to Altria. So I suppose that shows how maybe they need a little... But then again, I'm not their demographic, so...
Altria sounds like an airline. It's like Alitalia. Remember that one?
Yeah. So, but you know, I think this is very interesting also, right? I think all three, the commonality is they also decided to create a holding company. It looks very different, but perhaps keep the brand still intact. So Meta is the bigger company group, but Facebook is still there because they've changed the portfolio. So even in the case of Air Asia, perhaps Capital A is meant to take it to the next level, Capital A, but AirAsia is still around as the airline, but because it's trying to diversify into other parts of the business, so that's why they wanted to rename and change the positioning.
Yeah, the veracity of the name change depends a great deal on the reasons behind why the name is being changed. Like, for example, with Facebook going to Meta, the reasons are quite clear, because Mark Zuckerberg wants to go away from the whole bad smell of, you know, stealing people's data, a la Cambridge Analytica, etc. But then, for example, when Jack Dorsey changes Square to Block, it's because they want to pivot to the blockchain. So yes, one is trying to get away from a bad smell. The other one is trying to go into a new business. They're very different.
It's true. I think there are different rationales why people change their name. And one company that I've been following is Weight Watchers. Yeah. So they started out as a weight loss program. They rebranded a few years ago to WW International to distance themselves from that weight loss strategy. And they're trying to focus more on healthcare, fitness, just be more holistic. Yeah. But whether people actually grab on to that WW International, I think they'll always be Weight Watchers. You know, you hear Weight Watchers, you know it's they're going to have that association.
Absolutely. And I think for me, on a basis, and this was a conversation I remember Shaoning was saying, you know, about a couple of days ago, you can change the name, but the fundamentals and the capital structure and your balance sheet and liquidity all remains the same. So you really have to think very carefully, what does the name change represent? So, you know, for me, for example, Alphabet or Google. Google changed its name.
It's still Google to me.
It's still Google to you, but, you know, it does help them create an opportunity to say, look, let me invest beyond Google. Let me look at other parts of the business, right, like YouTube and such. So perhaps that's also the thing. But we must remember, as you say, a rose is still a rose, right? And you can call, you know, things so
you can
many
call
things.
A stink bug a butterfly, but it's still going to be stinky.
Yeah, egesta, excreta, it's still poo.
Excreta,
yeah,
exactly. Toilet engineer, sanitation engineer. So in terms of success stories, I think, for example, like Stellantis did a good job, right? Stellantis was the former Renault Peugeot partnership. Now they become Stellantis. They've been recording orders. They go into the EV space. It's interesting, right? And then, for example, new names. For example, what's that exercise company? Peloton. I think that's a brilliant name, right? Peloton, it's got all the right connotations, got bicycles, got, you know. So I think in certain cases, it's a success story, and in certain cases, it's not.
Yeah, I think also you must remember that you must think about the markets you operate in. If you look at, I'll give you an example, a cleaning detergent, right? In the United States, they call it Mr. Clean, but in Germany, it's called Meister Proper. So, okay, so like even chips. In UK, it's called Walkers, but in the US, it's called Lay's. So you also need to change the name.
I didn't know that. Walkers and Lay's are the
same
thing.
Right?
Did I just not
shift your world? I did, right? and even like, I would say KFC, in Quebec, it's called PFK.
No way. Because KFC is a bit of a misnomer in Quebec.
It is. And I think, but it's also like, you know, in certain countries, the names are quite used already and all that. So you have to kind of adjust to your market and situation as
well. So a lot of thought really needs to go into what you name your business. You know, tell us what you think. What name brands have been good, I guess, changes? What names reflect their brand well? And what are the misses? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We are going to take a quick break at 6:13 in the morning. We'll come back with a cautionary tale of someone who girlbossed a little too close to the sun. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Govinda by Kula Shaker. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 6:18 in the morning with Shazana, Shaoning and Chuang.
Now, I'm not Shaoning.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Philip.
My goodness. I don't know. Vaguely like Shaoning.
Philip, you're very pretty this morning.
Thank you.
You are right.
I put a bit of eyelash on today. That's why.
My apologies, Philip. My apologies. Well, it's Phil, Chuang and Shazana. I was going to say Phil, Chuang and Shaoning again. So.
Can you say Phil, Shazana and Tom or Brad?
Oh, for goodness sake. Again, we go with this story that you're not Tom Cruise. You're not Brad Pitt. Let's just be very clear.
I thought I got a role in MI9. Was it MI12 already?
I don't know, Chuang. The day I make that mistake, I mean, I think it's the day you need to, you know, I need therapy or help or something. So, you know, make that note. Okay, we're turning our attention to a story that's been making headlines this week. Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes was convicted of 4 counts of conspiring to defraud investors. Now, Theranos was, of course, that biotech startup which attracted millions in investments on the promise that it had the technology to test for multiple diseases based on a few drops of blood. It gathered the backing of top names in business such as Rupert Murdoch, Betsy DeVos, and even Joe Biden at one point called her inspiring. So how did so many people get it wrong?
I mean, it's incredible. You know, this story has so many layers to it. But, you know, just to build to that story, you said 4 counts guilty charge, but there were actually 11 counts leveled on her. 4, they exonerated her, and 3, they could not make up their minds. So, you know, I was listening to the Wall Street Journal podcast with respect to this trial. it was a very long trial. It is still going to be an ongoing saga.
It's not completely over.
But really, the jury was not 100% sure that she was found guilty. And for me, what was a very interesting thing was she was found guilty more on the wire fraud and the wire transfer charges, which was basically the institutional investors that basically said that she hoodwinked, compared to the patients. They couldn't really charge allegations against her with respect to patients.
Well, because the law will try and get you on whatever count they can get. Like, for example, Al Capone, the mafia head in the 1930s, he was found not because of murder or conspiracy, but he was found on, I think, money laundering or something. But some technicality. But I think the message from me here is quite simple. It can be multi-layered, or it can be very unilateral, which in one single layer, in the sense that Liz Holmes was something that Wall Street wanted to believe in. She was young, she was pretty, she was smart, she was well-spoken, and she had a good idea. And that's why she became a unicorn even in those days.
And I think the trial was very interesting because, and you say, right, this heady days of flush liquidity at the time.
Yeah, they were looking for heroes or heroines.
Correct. And so, you know, when you listen to the transcript of the court hearing, they were even saying some of the investments didn't want to do due diligence on her company because they were afraid they would not be included into the next round of funding. So that was quite shocking for me that many of the investor pools actually were worried to, you know, scare people like Elizabeth Holmes and that she would not take their money. It's like, take my money. And it's like she was at that stage. And for me, I'm just reflecting. I think this is worrying because if you think about last year when there's so much spare liquidity, I think we're going to see another Theranos soon.
And I'm not saying that RJ Scaringe of Rivian is one of them, right? But, you know, Wall Street likes to latch on to these young, smart, good-looking people with great ideas, right? Rivian is already a unicorn many times over. But we saw the same mistake with Adam Neumann and WeWork, right? Adam Neumann, young, tall, good-looking, well-spoken, WeWork, right? Blew up. Went from 40 billion to 4 billion.
I mean, I think a lot of analysts and a lot of observers are doing, you know, kind of some soul searching. Has Silicon Valley learned from this? I mean, I think there are a lot of cautionary tales that come out of this. The whole faking till you make it culture, like you said, these founders who project this aura of invincibility, of, you know, we can do it, we're visionary, but they don't really have the means to back it up. And I was just thinking about how when you mentioned that investors were afraid to question for fear they wouldn't be included, there's the whole FOMO. The fear of missing out on big money, so they don't want to delve too deep. I mean, those are all problematic things, yeah?
I liked your point that, you know, I think especially for a re-examination of Silicon Valley, I think many are saying, no, it's a very isolated case. It's an Elizabeth Holmes-specific case.
It's not isolated at all.
It's not isolated. And I think what compounds it further is that because it's a biotech investment, you're kind of playing huge bets on something with a not certain probability of whether it will be passed through or not, you know? Whereas if you talk about e-commerce, retail, or even to a certain extent, EVs, you can kind of say, okay, I know the physical product, but biotech investments are very hard because the success rate is also very high. And I was reading this book, you know, and you interviewed A Shot for Everything, right? Greg Zuckerman.
I did, yeah.
And about how hard it was to raise money for all these small vaccine companies because of the probability of success.
Yeah, I mean, I can't help but think about, remember what Warren Buffett said. He said quite famously once that it's only when the tide goes out that they realize who's swimming around naked, right? And there's so much money in EV, in the EV space now, it's quite scary. Who's going to get found out for being fakes? Do you know what I mean, right?
Yes. And there's so many, right? We talked about stories yesterday. Sony was getting into the EV space, Apple. Yeah. So you're right, you know, who's going to separate the wheat from the chaff? I think another interesting dimension of this story was that, you know, and this is more on the personal side, she actually got her ex-boyfriend, Sunny Balwani, to be the deputy CEO. And for me, a lesson learned is really try not to get a boyfriend involved in setting up businesses.
And remember, very famously, right, her transition from a normal voice to a deeper voice, and the way she used to dress up as, to look like Steve Jobs with a black turtleneck. You know, just all those little things, those little clues that no one picked up on.
I mean, I think it's this is a story that's going to be talked about for years to come, really, and there's so much to parse through it. If you have any thoughts on the Theranos scandal, what lessons should Silicon Valley take away from this? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. It's 6:24 in the morning. We're heading into the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin, and then after that, we'll cover what's making news headlines around the world. Taking you to the news is the King of Rock by Prefab Sprout. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. That was the Stray Cats with I Won't Stand in Your Way. They don't sound like Stray Cats at all. They sound absolutely melodious, you know, lovely to listen to. It's 6:40 in the morning on Friday, the 7th of January. We are The Morning Run, Shazana, Xiaoning, not Xiaoning, Shazana, Chuang and Philip. Shazana, Chuang and Philip. All right, we're taking a look at what's making headlines around the world. Can I start with this headline that I saw in the Financial Times, which is that China is rushing to develop its own mRNA vaccine as doubts grow over its local jabs. So we know that China was one of the first players in the vaccine, in the COVID-19 vaccine space with Sinovac and Sinopharm. Yep. Their technology used the traditional vaccine technology of having inactivated viruses. So they were very quick to produce vaccines that could be distributed. Yes. But now even they are looking at alternatives in the face of the Omicron variant.
Correct. I think, 2 weeks ago, the University of Hong Kong and the Chinese University of Hong Kong did do and publish a research that said 3 doses of Sinovac's CoronaVac COVID-19 vaccine did not provide adequate level of antibodies to fight the Omicron variant. But the analysis revealed that, for the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine, the 3rd dose was sufficient to provide enough protective levels.
Yeah, interesting. Of course, China is pursuing a zero COVID policy. And I think Xi'an, for example, Xi'an, where the Terracotta Warriors are, Xi'an is a city that's bigger than New York City, right? And they have basically locked down the entire place. And I think what's happening with China with the zero COVID policy is affecting oil supplies because there's no demand, there's nobody on the road. So China continues to lead the narrative, as does COVID. And so this report from Morning Brew, America canceled 1,500 US flights yesterday. So in fact, now for the 11th straight day, airlines in America have canceled flights for over 1,000 planes, 1,000 flights, the worst stretch since the start of the pandemic.
And this is a big problem, because what's happening here is you come see the issue within demand and operations. In the past, right, when you had a pandemic, right, when you had other cases, there were people, of course, not being able to come to work, right? But at the same time, they were not traveling as well. So that was fine. Demand and supply were moving lockstep. But now you see demand still going on, right? Still flying. But because of the operational requirements, which are so tight, you're seeing so much pressure on these travel companies.
So how do they cope? Because they've got to buy all... They can't just call jet fuel into the... they've got to buy and stockpile, right?
It's not only jet fuel. It's even staff at the airports.
Yeah, staff.
So if you see over the Christmas, so many flights were cancelled.
So are there health risks? I mean, not safety risks, right? Just in terms of getting procedures down pat and getting, routines down correct.
I think the issue is that what you see with Omicron is that it's so virulent, right? It's so transmissible. I think that's what people are very worried about. I don't think it's changed the severity index. That's why you saw a couple of days ago, US, there was 1 million cases, but the ICU beds really didn't move an inch so much, you see. So I think that's the biggest issue here. And I think it doesn't change whether or not it is safer or not. It's just that the variant is just more virulent.
Yeah, that unpredictability is really bad because, so hotels are not as, do not pose the same safety risks as airlines, for example, right? Mm-hmm. But when you try and go to a hotel in December, right? Service standards were not the same as before because they didn't have as many staff. So beds are not properly made, rooms are not ready in time.
Yeah.
But if you bought an airline, right, bought an airplane, this is quite a different level of safety involved.
I mean, I think that's why we're seeing so many cancellations, because they just don't have the staff available to ensure that the flight takes off safely or that procedures are fulfilled properly. And it seems to be clear that for the aviation sector, at least, I mean, Omicron, even as demand picks up, as you say, the fact is Omicron is still that stumbling block
in the recovery. Operations first, which will basically crimp demand later.
Wow. All right. It is 6:44 in the morning. We are taking a quick break. And when we come back, we'll look at more headlines, both local and international. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. That was Lenny Kravitz with It Ain't Over Till It's Over. The Morning Run isn't over. It's just begun. Yes. I'm Shazana with Phil and Chuang. 6:49 in the morning. We are now taking a look at all the headlines in our newspapers and portals. Tell me what's caught your eye, gentlemen.
I think just to continue the conversation we had on COVID, Khairee Jamaluddin, our health minister, said yesterday, and this is in the Star newspaper, and I think across all the newspapers, 30,000 a day if we do nothing. I think this is the scenario that COVID cases are likely to hit 30,000 a day by end of March if the government did not take steps to slow down the spread of the Omicron variant, including suspending the Umrah trips.
Ooh, from bad news and all doom and gloom, I'm going to talk about some interesting news because CES, it's a big global technology show
that's happening
in Vegas
convention.
Right now. Right, some of the coolest tech, for example, company called Shiftall, they've got a pebble field device that straps onto your back. You can change temperatures from warm to cold. So Doesn't matter where you are in the world now, you can actually have the temperature of your choice. And then BMW,
what?
Yeah.
Like your air conditioning?
So you're wearing a jacket, lah. And then you want to feel cooler, you just, you know, turn the dial lower and go blue, for example, right? If you're, not, if you're like in the middle of
it's
winter
like an
in the UK.
Con.
Yeah,
it's like an aircon on you.
Or a hot con, lah, if you want.
Hot con, yeah. You mean a heater, not a hot con.
Hot con, oh, no, Penang language, lah. And then BMW, right, have got a new car paint that changes color, lah. So if you want to change your color of your car, you just go from whatever color to whatever
so
color.
So it's like really a cool mood ring for your car?
Kind of, yeah. So if you're feeling blue.
I love the analogies today.
You know what I mean,
I love
right?
the analogies. But that's a vanity ego trip, like, isn't it? Just to change
your
car.
Yeah. And then there's this new product called the Labrador Retriever. It's a nightstand-shaped robot that carries stuff around your house. So if you're feeling lazy, if you're sitting on the sofa, you just get it to, you know, bring beverages from your fridge to you.
Can I just say, I'm so disappointed with all these technologies. I really think we should be focusing our efforts to solve bigger issues in this world than have a color changing car or like having a hot corn in my apparel.
True.
I really think there are so many bigger problems in this world. And it got me thinking whether the pace of our technology advancement has actually decelerated in this earth. And that's why many people are trying to go to the moon now, because they find that everything is plateaued here in terms of technology advancements in my mind. And those three stories we just now made, Chuang, really is testament to that.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's what they say about Apple, right? Apple hasn't really innovated for the last 7 years.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of technology and incubation at the moment. And I feel that in the next few years, we are going to see great advancements. And the COVID-19 vaccines is just one example of advancements that seem to have come out of nowhere, but were actually built on decades of research. And speaking of COVID-19 and booster shots, I think yesterday the health ministry announced that it will open 4 large vaccination centers in the Klang Valley. Now, this news came as a bit of a dismay to our commentator that we spoke to earlier in this week, public health specialist Dr. Farhan Rusli. When he spoke to us, he did say that he didn't really support mega PPVs. He felt that using the network of GPs would be a much safer option. But the health ministry has decided, in order to ramp up booster shots, these mega PPVs may be necessary. And we did see that the initial COVID-19 vaccination rollout was ramped up when they had these big centers where lots of people could get shots in one day.
Yeah, just to give you some stats on the numbers, 22.5% of the total population has now been boosted. I think that's a key sign. I think they're trying to ramp it up further. You're right, I think it's a divisive issue. You know, having seen and I was personally boosted at Paradigm Mall. I got my booster jab at Paradigm Mall. Actually, the process was quite smooth, I have to say, overall. And how, I mean, the first 1 or 2 days generally it's a bit challenging because you don't gauge the crowds, but when you get your structure in place, it is an effective way to move quite fast.
My question is, where does it all stop, right? I mean, it was Israel that is doing a fourth booster. Yep. And then I got a meme yesterday about, you know, these two guys that have been, you know, disfigured beyond, you know, recognition. And they've had, the joke was 7 boosters, we're all good, you know. You know that one where, yeah.
So that's all exaggeration.
But where does it end? Do you know what I mean?
Well, look, the flu vaccine is something that we take annually, right? It's well established that we take the flu vaccine annually. Some other vaccines need boosters later in life, for example.
Flu's been around for 100 years. This one
and
hasn't.
COVID-19 has been around for a little while, which explains why all these new advancements come up bit by bit. You know, we're not going to expect something established for something that's new.
I wonder whether the advancements are all about preventing or whether it's about medication going forward, you know, because, you know, we saw things like molnupiravir, all these Merck drugs.
Which has not been approved
in Malaysia yet, from my understanding. But Malaysia is planning to order a couple, right? But they're also changing the order because of the price tag or such, from what I heard. But I think that's where I'm quite keen to see where the technology advancements are, whether that's actually more on the treatment side or whether, and that is kind of pointing to the fact that we are living with the pandemic, essentially. That's the question in my mind.
And I think it's important that all these efforts are being galvanized at the same time. It's not just about vaccines. It's not just about treatments. It's not just about wearing your mask. But the thing is, we have to do all of them together simultaneously in order to get the highest level of protection at all these different levels.
Okay, you got me more hopeful. I don't think it's the end of the world. After hearing Chuang's stories on the lack of technological advancements, you know.
It is not the end of the world. We can make it through this if we all do our part.
I think so.
Layer layer up the protection, including by getting your booster shots, including by wearing your masks, including by maintaining safe distances when you go out. So, you know, let's all keep doing that. What other headlines have caught your eye in the papers
today? I am just very excited because if you're in the laundromat business, you are in for some good money because it's brisk business as a result of the poor inclement weather. I think people are going to the laundromats. So if you're interested in investing in laundromats, I think that's a great place to invest in. The other one I think we see also in the Star newspaper, more mechanics needed to fix flood-ravaged bikes.
There we go.
Yeah. Did you say mechanics?
Mechanics, yes.
Car fixers.
Car fixers. To fix
have you
the
not
flood?
Seen all the cars basically lying on the roads?
Yeah,
you're in Penang. You missed all of that.
I was in Kelantan. I was in Terengganu. And we caught the start of the oh. It was crazy. The rain was so heavy. Unbelievable.
And this happens yearly. For many parts of the country, and we're starting to feel it closer and closer to our urban centers as well.
Yeah, no kidding, man. I want to also talk about Shamsul Ahmad is the editor of the Malaysian Reserve, right? And he writes an op-ed on the front page every day, I think. And he was talking about the failed government that Tun Mahathir accused Malaysia of. And this coincides with the latest data that shows that foreign shareholdings of Malaysian stocks is at the lowest on record at 14.6%.
14.6%.
Yeah, really, really low. And, you know, it just shows a lack of faith that the global foreign investment community has in Malaysia for an assortment of reasons.
I mean, that's like a canary in the coal mine, right? I think policymakers really need to start taking this seriously. If these indicators are coming through, it's not something we can just sweep under the rug and say, oh, it's fine, we're doing great. No, we're not.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.